Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. Glad you're here with us again this week. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. We got a really cool show for you today. On the program is Dr. Sherry Hoppe, who has written a book with her sister Sylvia Yates called Hooked But Not Hopeless, Escaping the Lure of Addiction. I really like this book. Sylvia Yates has struggled with addiction, and her sister, Dr. Sherry Hoppe, sat down and wrote about how she finally kicked it. And there's some other extra goodies in the book that are excellent as well. We're going to be talking to both Dr. Sherry Hoppe and Sylvia Yates right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. I really do enjoy getting emails from you. You can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney at yahoo.com. Drop me a line. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. I have on the phone with me today Sherry Hoppe and Sylvia Yates. They've written a book called Hooked But Not Hopeless, Escaping the Lure of Addiction. And it says here on the back cover that Dr. Sherry Hoppe and her sister Sylvia Yates wrote this book to reveal how an average person can be caught in the far-reaching and unrelenting tentacles of substance abuse. That's something that we certainly deal with here on The Journey of Hope. Sherry and Sylvia, welcome to The Journey of Hope.
Thank you.
I guess I'd just like to start off with, Sherry, let's start with you, and let's find out a little bit about how the book is laid out.
The book is divided into three sections, Rodney. The first section talks about Sylvia's story, how she fell into prescription drug addiction following the end of a very bad marriage, and also because of the impact addiction has on families. This section includes statements from her three children about their feelings as they watch their mother sink further and further into the abyss of addiction. Interspersed in this section is information on addiction, talking about why people get hooked, how many people take the bait, in other words, how many people across the United States are substance abusers, whether alcohol, prescription drugs, or hard drugs. And then also, why escaping from the hook is so difficult. Why it's not just a matter of willpower. The second section deals with patterns and personalities that are typical of addiction, trying to illustrate that many times there are commonalities among addicts and addiction. And then the third section, the final part of it, provides stories of seven recurring addicts, again interspersed with chapters on how an addict can regain his or her life.
It's an interesting way to lay the book out. And by the way, I have read the book, and it's very good. Listeners, I think this is something that you would enjoy reading, especially if you're trying to struggle with keeping that monkey off your back as you work through your parole or your sentence is discharged and those little things from the past start to pop up. Sylvia has been where we've been, a lot of us. And Sylvia, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of your background and particularly the low points of your addiction so that we have an idea of where it is you're coming from.
Okay. I took prescription painkillers for 17 years. I started to take them to deal with my... I was married with my husband being abusive and having affairs, and I didn't know how to deal with the pain, so I took pills just to numb myself. And the more I hurt, the more pills I took, until I had become totally dependent on them just to get through each day. And I thought they were helping, but I found out they were just a temporary escape, and they were causing me to be severely depressed. But even then, I couldn't stop. And I first started going to doctors that would prescribe them. And then when I ran out of doctors, I started to order them off the internet, and I bought them on the street. And I was taking 30 to 40 every day, and I was spending about $500 a week.
Wow. What were you taking? Sylvia, what were you taking?
I was taking hydrocodone, Percocet, just whatever I could get. Mm-hmm. And, well, the first time I went to rehab, I was also taking Xanax, but I got off the Xanax, but I continued with the pain pills, the hydrocodone, the entire 17 years. But, I didn't have the money to buy them because they were so expensive, and I started to steal, and the more I stole, the worse I felt about myself. And to deal with the guilt and shame, I just took more and more pills, and I couldn't break the cycle.
Sylvia, you also had some problems with the law. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was arrested about 10 times and charged with 11 felonies. And each time I was arrested, I would tell myself and my family that was it. I was finished. I wasn't going to take anymore. But within a few hours or days, I forgot, and as soon as I took that first pill, then it started again. I couldn't stop. I lost money, my house, my friends, trust, respect, and 17 years of my life.
It's amazing to all of us. I mean, all of us have been through similar situations that even the incarceration, and, you know, sometimes that's not enough to get us to stop. But eventually you went to treatment, and the treatment didn't take. And this question is for both of you. I'm just curious, why is it, do you think, that the treatment didn't work the first time around?
Sherry, and I think one of the reasons is that Sylvia didn't want to go to treatment the first couple of times. She didn't think she needed to go, but her three children and my other sister and I were just convinced that she was going to die if she didn't get help. So we forced her into treatment. And therefore, particularly in the first treatment cycle, she was more concerned about just getting out of rehab than she was about getting better.
Right. Okay. Sylvia. Sylvia.
First time I went to rehab, I didn't fully understand addiction. And not only I didn't think I needed it, I didn't want to go. The second time, I understood it more, but I didn't think it was possible to deal with my problems without drugs. I had depended on drugs for so long, I was scared to be without them. I think the fear to live without pills is the biggest reason it didn't work.
Well, Sherry,
that I enabled her continuing addiction because I continued to support her financially. I bailed her out over and over. When she would get arrested, I would pay her bond. I would pay part of the restitution if she had restitution. I would pay her house payment when she said she didn't have money to pay the house payment, knowing she could probably put the money for the house payment on drugs. So I was an enabler.
Well, Sherry, let's pursue that for just a second. For those families that might be listening who have had a drug-addicted person come out of incarceration into their home, what advice would you have for parents and loved ones to keep from enabling the person as they come home?
Well, advice is certainly easier than doing it. And advice is to have tough love and let the addict suffer the consequences of his or her addiction. The problem is I couldn't stand the thought of Sylvia going to jail.
Right.
And so when it came down to helping her or letting her go to jail, every time I helped her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably prolonged her addiction. Because she didn't have to deal, well, certainly she had to deal with part of the consequences. She would lose jobs, she would be arrested, she would have to go to court. But one way or the other, we were able to always end up with nothing worse than probation or community service.
Right.
So I think had she had to deal at a higher level with the consequences, she might have gotten better faster. You know, I don't know that, but I do know that I helped her stay in addiction.
Sherry, she did eventually relapse, though, and you write extensively in the book about relapse. Talk to us a little bit about that. What are triggers? You talk about triggers, and you also talk about the relapse process. Can you give us a synopsis of all of those things?
Sure. What puts a person back into addiction when they're recovering is different for each person, but typically they can be characterized as people, places, things, and emotions or moods. In terms of people, if an addict continues to associate with people who use drugs or alcohol, the craving is going to come back because the person is sitting on the sidelines. For example, one of the stories in the book about a person named Gary went to the radio station and everybody there was on drugs. They'd go out back and smoke marijuana, right. And so when he went through rehab and went back to work there, he realized very quickly he couldn't stay in that place or he would be sucked back into drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Second is places. If a person continues to go to places where they abuse drugs or alcohol, then there's a tendency to start again. Another story in the book is about David, who was a pharmaceutical rep, and he regularly had to entertain doctors at very nice dinners, where alcohol flows freely. So it was very hard for him to resist the temptation to use again. And what it sounds like, he couldn't take that first sip of alcohol or he was hooked again. The other two areas, things, if a person is around objects or things that remind him or her of addiction, for example, if an addict who smokes cocaine sees a pipe, that may trigger, or a prescription drug addict may just be as simple as seeing a pill bottle. And then the last area relates to emotions or mood. And when a person is depressed or anxious, worried about problems, then they may well take the temptation that Sylvia did because she worried about all of her financial problems and so forth. May be tempted to take a pill to get that temporary relief of pain.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned stages of relapse. Basically, a person goes first typically through emotional relapse when the emotions begin to get the best of the person. And they begin to think, oh, if I just had a pill or had a drink. Mental relapse is the next stage, and that is when the person moves from these idle thoughts to very concrete thoughts about how can I get a pill? How can I get a drink? So they begin to think about the relief that came in the past when they got that drink or pill.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last step is physical relapse, when the person physically gets in a car and starts towards the place where they can get the pill or the drink. And usually at that point, it's impossible to stop the relapse.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Girls, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back more with Sylvia and Sherry, we're going to pick up with Sylvia and ask her how she finally got this stuff in her rearview mirror. Short break after. We'll be right back after this. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey y'all, me again. One of the things I've done since I've been home from prison to help myself is to be constructive with my downtime, and I've taken up the hobby of learning how to play a little bit of music, and I know that some of you out there have done the same thing to be productive with your downtime as well. Something fun to do, and it's not going to get you into trouble. If you're one of those people that are into the music, I want to tell you about a product called the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. It's called the Jam Buddy Chord Chart, and what it does is it uses something called the Nashville Numbering System, and it enables you to play any song in any key. And this is something that's going to make you more viable as a player when you start jamming with other people. And let me tell you how to get a hold of this thing. You can get a free sample of it. That's why I want you to check it out. It's at angiesbanjo.com. That's angiesbanjo.com. You click on the link for the Jam Buddy Chord Chart, and you're going to get a free one-page sample so you can see what this thing is. And I think you're going to like it. It's an ebook. It's very, very cool. You get that free sample at angiesbanjo.com. It's the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. Welcome back. We're talking with Sherry Hoppe and Sylvia Yates. The book is called Hooked But Not Hopeless, Escaping the Lure of Addiction. We were talking about the stages of relapse and things that trigger people into relapse. Sylvia, eventually you were able to put this behind you. And at some point, you had to learn how to cope with your life without leaning on an addiction. And we're all curious how you did that.
Well, the last time I was arrested, everything was different. I had been praying that for the past few months that God would help me somehow. I wanted to quit taking the pills. I just could never get to the point where I could stop. But the last time I was arrested, I just turned my addiction over to God. I surrendered my life, my problems, my family, my future, and I realized that God could do for me what I couldn't do for myself, but I had to learn to let Him. And it was hard because the pills were an instant fix whenever there was a problem, but I finally learned and realized that they were just a temporary fix. And I've learned that I can live now without drugs. Mm-hmm. I never thought it was possible. And even though my life isn't perfect, I still have problems. But I've learned not to depend on the pills anymore. I've learned to just let go and let God. I wish I had learned that years ago, and I wouldn't have lost 17 years. But I'm clean now, and I'm a lot happier, and my life has totally changed for the better.
Sylvia, how long have you been sober now?
A little over 2 years now.
Excellent. Well, congratulations. This next question is for both of you, and this is an argument, not an argument, it's more of a discussion that we have here on the Journey of Hope from time to time, and we get different answers on it, and I want to get your take on it. Is there a magic bullet for getting sober? This question is for both of you. Sherry, you want to start?
Well, the answer is no. I don't think there is a magic bullet. I think a person has to be ready for help before they can receive help. I think part of the problem is people like Sylvia are forced into rehab, and the bullet doesn't work because they aren't willing to accept any kind of help. They don't think they need it. So I don't really think there is a magic bullet. I think you have to get to the place in your life where you decide that living with drugs is worse than living without them and having to face your problems.
Sylvia, what do you say?
Sherry's right. There is no magic bullet. And she's right that you have to be ready. and you have to want it, you have to want to be clean. And even though I wanted it the first two times, I just couldn't do it. But the last time, it's like I said a few minutes ago, I thought God did it for me because I had surrendered it to Him. And on chapter 22, Bobby G says that rehab without God is a dead end street. And for me, that's true because I had gone through it twice without God. And the third time, I knew that He was in control. And He also said letting go and letting God take over is the path to becoming permanently unhooked. And that is also true for me. And without God, I couldn't have done it, I don't believe.
Well, the
Don't just blame everyone, including God, for her problem. It was never her fault. It was always an excuse for why she was doing what she was doing. And I think part of that magic bullet for her is, as she turned it all over to God, she accepted her part of the responsibility for what her life had become.
And that leads into the next question. What is the relationship that exists between self-esteem and responsibility? And Sherry, why is that important to recovery?
Many addicts don't have much self-respect or self-esteem. They feel down on themselves. They're convinced they're bad people to a large degree because they're ashamed of who they are and what they've done as a result of alcohol. So they use, "I'm not strong enough. I'm not strong enough to deal with this. I'm not strong enough to handle my problems," as an excuse to escape responsibility. And so, as I said earlier, to rebuild self-esteem, addicts have to admit accountability. They have to admit that they're responsible for their addiction and the actions that accompany their addiction. And once they've done that, they can be proud of themselves for taking charge of their lives instead of simply blaming others for their problems. Mm-hmm. With this pride comes a belief in themselves and the ability to change their lives. It's not a matter of willpower. It's a matter of believing in yourself. And then beyond that, as the 12 steps of AA and NA teach, turning it over, and as Sylvia did, to a higher power.
Well, it sounds like that Sylvia has turned the corner, and eventually you came to a point where you decided to write this book, the both of you. Tell us how you came to the decision to write this book.
I'm so proud of Sylvia. Like, 17 years is a long time to just be able to say, "I'm going to write a book." And she has done that. She became somebody that none of us knew anymore, and she didn't even know herself. And so I was so proud of what she had done. And I had been writing books for several years, including a couple of self-help on grief. And I decided that her story needed to be told, that it could help other people.
Mm-hmm.
But Excellent. Somebody didn't think that her story was significant enough to be in a book. But we have other addicts and alcoholics in the book, and what I wanted was just to tell my story, because I know there are addicts out there could identify with me, and
absolutely,
that have lost hope that they can ever be normal. And I just want them to know that it is possible, and that they can break that hold that drugs or alcohol have on them.
Well, Sylvia,
they're willing to help them if they will just turn it over to Him like I did.
Sylvia, what advice would you have for listeners that are struggling with their sobriety right now? What would you say to them?
Well, they need to get help. Either go to a rehab or find a recovery support system, because that helps them to know that they're not alone. Because you feel alone, you feel like you're the only person in the world that is doing the things like stealing and lying. You just feel so bad about yourself. And when you get around other addicts and alcoholics, you realize you aren't alone. And you really need to get away from a different environment.
Sherry, how
possible they do need to rehab at least someone that could help them.
Sherry, what would you say to people that are listening that are struggling with their sobriety right now?
Well, my advice is really to family members, because I've never been addicted. And that is, my advice would be to never give up hope. I mean, there were times during that 17-year saga that I just thought, I might as well quit. There is no way I'm ever going to be able to help Sylvia. And the truth was, I couldn't. Sylvia had to help herself. But families need to not give up hope. No one is hopeless. I mean, that's why we call the book, Hope But Not Hopeless. No one is hopeless. And what a person has to do is to let go of yesterday and decide to make tomorrow better. It's never too late to start again. Mm-hmm. And when the addict is ready for help, the family needs to be there for support. And I would advise families to learn about addiction. I learned a lot more about addiction writing this book than I did during the 17 years of living through it with Sylvia. And I learned a lot of information that would have been helpful to know. So I would advise your listeners, if they are family members dealing with an addict, learn about it. Addiction is a disease. It is not something a person does by choice. And when you understand the disease, it puts you in a better position to understand the addict and to understand where they're coming from. And you have to be able to do that to have any hope of helping them find the help that they need.
Sherry, would you recommend Al-Anon to family members?
Yes, I think Al-Anon certainly is an organization that does for families what AA and NA does for the addict. And mm-hmm. that is, it helps you know you're not out there alone. You're not the only person who's dealing with this. And one of the reasons for telling Sylvia's story is that she's an average, normal person mm-hmm. who led a good life, and yet she fell into addiction. And so when you go to the Al-Anon meeting, you learn that you're not so different after all, and the addict is not so different after all. This happens in everyday families.
That's
every
right.
day.
That's right. When I was in prison, ladies, one of the things that really struck me was, for example, I was a school teacher. I taught school and coached football for 16 years, and you'd be surprised how many people in prison come from, have degrees, come from upper middle class type environments, and it's not all people from the hood that are in prison. It was shocking to me, and so you're right. This can happen to anybody. You ladies have done a fantastic job on the book. Where can we get the book?
The easiest place to do it is to simply order it from Amazon.com.
Okay.
Hope But Not Hopeless, Escaping the Lure of Addiction. And it is available as a paperback and also on Kindle.
Well, I have the book right here in front of me. It's an excellent read. Hooked But Not Hopeless by Sherry L. Hoppe and Sylvia Yates. Congratulations to both of you on this wonderful book. Sylvia, congratulations to you on your sobriety. I'm so proud of you. We're all proud of you. And I want to thank both of you for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Thanks for having us. Thanks, Rodney.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more on the Journey of Hope. I'm Rodney Mathers. We'll be right back after this. Wow, we are flat out of time. I want to thank my special guest today, Dr. Sherry Hoppe and Sylvia Yates. Their book is called Hooked But Not Hopeless, Escaping the Lure of Addiction. You want to be sure and check that out. And I want to remind you of something. If God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.